I don't expect anyone I work with to be perfect, because there's no such thing, right? You have to be able to make mistakes and support one another through them, try to find a solution. But it's that everyone can make mistakes, you just don't make the same one twice.
You're listening to the Building Better Futures podcast, where innovation meets inspiration. In each episode, host Eric Hirani journeys alongside notable thought leaders who are shaping the future, cultivating exceptional work cultures, and nurturing the next generation of trailblazers. We aim to spark inspiration by engaging in dialogue with leaders from groundbreaking companies, innovative projects, and exceptional teams. Our goal is to empower individuals to positively impact those around them and leave a lasting legacy of positive change in our communities and society at large. Let's dive in together and explore what it takes to build better futures, one conversation at a time.
Today, I'm excited to be joined by Jessica Sherman, Vice Chair and Principal of the Douglaston Companies, which includes Douglaston Development, Levine Builders, and Clinton Management. Hey, Jessica, how are you?
Hi, Eric. Thanks for having me.
Of course. I'm really excited to jump into this conversation. But before we do that, I always start our show with some good news and gratitude. It gives us, you know, that the positive edge, an uplifting news that I'm looking for. So I'll ask you, is there any personal or professional good news or gratitude you'd like to share with me in the audience?
I am grateful it's September. My kids are back to school. Everyone's summer vacations are over. So work is busy and it's a beautiful time of year.
Definitely. And it's interesting. You picked a time-related one, and that's okay. But I'm also going to pick a time-related one, even though this episode won't air for a couple of weeks. But I always like to share a gratitude. My gratitude's always to the guests. So thank you for doing this. I know you're incredibly busy. Even today, I know you were like rushing back from a lunch meeting, and you were like, so I appreciate you taking the time. My other gratitude and my good news is, you know, we started the Building Better Futures Foundation earlier this year. And we just had our inaugural event yesterday. It was the golf outing. When this airs, it will no longer have been yesterday. It'll be like 2 months ago. But we had some incredible honorees. We packed the room. We had, I think, 29 foursomes golf. We had even more people for dinner. We raised a lot of money for Salvadori Center and Contractors for Kids, both amazing organizations helping. You know, Salvadori does a lot to give back to the AEC community by educating like K-12 students. And Contractors for Kids supports families in need when a child or someone has fallen ill and maybe both parents can't work or they need some financial support. So it was just such a incredible day. And I'm going to be grateful for that for a long time. So that might be mine for the next couple of episodes. But
congratulations. That's really amazing. You should be proud.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a big accomplishment.
We were very, very excited. But now is like, it's one of those things. And I'm sure you feel this way about a lot you take on, that I thought wasn't going to be as hard as it ended up being. It was so much time and energy, and there were so many of us involved, and it was worth it in the end. But it was
I know what you mean. I feel like if you're the kind of person that takes things on, you keep saying yes, and it's great because you make new friends and you learn new things, but it also means that you are going off time.
You've got to put in the time. But that was great. Appreciate you sharing your gratitude. I have a bunch of friends, you know, I think it was last Tuesday, maybe, or whatever the first day of school was.
Tuesday.
I got all the text messages. Kids
we
are
all
on
remember.
Bus. I'm ready.
The bus is the greatest thing ever. Like, it's like they leave and you have freedom.
Yeah, it's so great. So, all right. Well, I want to give you a minute here, a couple of minutes. Tell us about yourself. You know, let the audience get to know you. Where'd you grow up? Where'd you go to school? How did you end up in this line of work, right?
I am from New York, Long Island. And my parents are both New Yorkers as well. When I was born, my dad had recently started a contracting company. So he was a contractor. Before that, he had been a construction worker. He had worked for other contractors and went on his own. So sort of real estate contracting been in my family since before I can remember. My dad, who is one of my role models, along with my mom, who is a wonderful, smart, amazing person, turned his contracting company into a development and management company, you know, over the course of 20 years, built what's now the Douglaston Companies, development, construction, and management firms that are vertically integrated and work together, mostly on projects in the New York region. So, as I end to be up here, as I mentioned, my dad had started a contracting company. Real estate was something we talked about every day at the kitchen table. And I was always interested through my parents, who not only worked in real estate and built homes and communities, but also were very philanthropic with their time and their money in the concept of community. We were always giving back to different communities we were part of, communities on an island, communities in the city, learning about people from different backgrounds with different experiences. And that led me to study urban studies at college. So undergrad, I went to University of Pennsylvania. I loved being in Philadelphia, working in schools, working with government agencies. And when I was graduating, I realized I loved the work I did, but I didn't know how much of an impact it had on its participants. Was it really helping people? That led me to Oxford, where I got a master's in social policy, evidence-based social interventions, which really gave me the tools to think critically about, do social policies and programs work? How are they benefiting people? Is it the best use of time and money? I went from grad school to a few different jobs. I did corporate social responsibility work. I worked in the nonprofit sector. And then I spent 2 years at the Port Authority of New York and New Jersey doing infrastructure development. And while I was there, I decided I wanted to get my MBA. So back to school. And when I graduated, I was looking at jobs in economic development and community development, at which point my dad, his company had grown quite a bit, and he was doing a lot of affordable housing development in addition to market rate development. And he's like, come here, try it here. If you don't like it, we'll figure it out. So that was 10 years ago. So I guess I liked it. And I've been at Douglaston for 10 years. I started with just Douglaston development, working on affordable housing projects, ground up construction, help build out our preservation arm. So we do a lot of preservation, including New York City Housing Authority or NYCHA, public-private partnerships. Very excitingly, we actually renovated Linden houses and Pim Warman houses, and my dad spent part of his childhood living in Linden houses. So that was a particularly, emotional process and exciting project for all of us. Now I serve as the vice chair of all three of our companies. So over time, my role evolved from just doing sort of project management work on the affordable side to including a lot of our strategic partnerships, external affairs, and now overseeing alongside my brother and my dad, all three of our companies, development, construction, and management.
That's such an amazing background. And I don't know where to start, but I think I'll start with, did you just say your resume included an MBA from Columbia, a BA from UPenn, and a master's from Oxford? Is that the right educational bio there?
Yes. I think that, helping me get through all those programs is part of the reason my dad felt so strongly about me coming to work for him. I contributed to your education and I will reap the benefits.
The other thing I wanted to touch on, so it sounds similar to you, but a second generation, and I know that can have its own challenges and finding your own way, which is really cool. And the reason I just thought of that was, I think actually the first time we corresponded was probably 10, maybe 7 or 10 years ago. I think you had just probably joined or started with your dad. It was definitely pre-COVID. And you guys were kind enough to have me in, which I always appreciate. I think it's so great when large companies are willing to talk to their partners, even when they haven't worked with them before. But it's really cool to hear about your progression there. That's awesome. Very exciting.
Yeah, I think being a second generation is really interesting. When I think about how I want to be perceived as sort of a second generation leader, I go back to my dad's favorite quote. He likes to say, he who lifts the heavy weights gets the muscles. So at the end of the day, whoever you are, like, you got to work hard, you got to be nice to people, you got to do your best, you got to work with people, own up to what you do right and what you do wrong. So I've been really fortunate to be able to have my dad serve as my role model in that respect. I think both of my parents, both professionally and personally, do a great job of having a strong moral compass and knowing the kind of people they want to be. And I know sometimes in business, that comes second to a lot of people, right? It's like, what am I going to do? How am I going to make money? How am I going to be successful? But actually, I think that focusing on the kind of person you want to be helps answer the rest of the questions, because you only get one chance to do it. You only get one chance to, create relationships and, build, like my dad did, a legacy. So being thoughtful about what that looks like for each person, to me, is a really important part of building a career that you can be proud of.
I think it's great advice. And I will get to favorite quotes and advice later, but you might have just answered those questions already. Although that's your dad's favorite quote. I want to hear your maybe later on.
It's a family business. That's mine too.
But the thing that was touching, I was talking about the golf outing we did yesterday, and you spoke about your family and giving. And I think it's so wonderful when you know, when people are able to do that and that they do that, right? You know, I touched on about my dad. So my dad's also one of my role models. And I said, you know, it was that event, because I'm not a golfer, was really born out of his love of golfing and his love of giving. And he really, he taught us all about, like me, my brother and my sister about that. And I think it's wonderful. So it sounds like your dad's an amazing person, and hopefully I get to meet him again.
Definitely.
So let's talk about Douglas in a little bit. So you said your dad it sounds like early on he lived in a NYCHA housing project. So how did you guys first become interested in development? And then you spoke about this a little bit, but like, that must have been a very personal decision, right? Like, do I want to go work with my dad? And what got you interested in New York City development?
I think I was always interested in New York City development. It's all we ever knew, my brother and I, right? Like, we could see my dad's eyes light up when he told us a story about, you know, we'd drive in for a Knick game and we'd pass any block we were on. There were three buildings he had done something on, even if it was just fix a toilet, and 10 stories about, you know, some epic New York real estate development that occurred here with a history and a lesson and a legacy. So it was always something that was part of who we were. I think at Douglaston, and this is really, you know, born from my parents' commitment to community, we see real estate development not just about building a building. You're building a home, you're building a community, you're changing the way a street looks. It's not just for the people in that building, it's for the people next door. It's for the stores that, you know, need employees, or schools that are filling seats. It's more than just a building. And it's also for us more than just building something and handing it over to somebody, right? We're long-term owners who invest in communities and work with tons of partners, you know, investors, for-profit partners, nonprofit partners to build communities. When I was in college and grad school, I saw the work my dad and my brother, because he joined before I did, were doing, and the excitement that they each had over the projects they were building. It's hard work. Every project's different, but we all, I guess, like problem solving. So watching them really love what they were doing and seeing the impact they had. You know, we would go to ribbon cuttings or events with partners and seeing the pride they had in what they had accomplished, and realizing how fortunate I was to have the opportunity to be a part of that with people I love and care about. So that, coupled with my own commitment to community building, my own love of problem solving, sort of made it seem like this would be a good fit for me long term.
Yeah, and sounds like you're in like the sounds like a great role, right? You're excited about what you do. I can see it on your face, and that's all we can all ask for. And to your point about the impact our industry has, I mean, it's real tangible impact, right? You're building, like you said, a home for someone, or, you know, maybe not you directly, but adjacent companies to what you guys are doing are building transportation and, you know, building schools and building, you know, even commercial facilities where people are able to be employed, right? To make a living and provide for their family. So it's just like, I love all of that about what we get to do. And it's really cool to hear you talk about it.
Also, because we build so much affordable housing, we really are partners to New York City and New York State in figuring out how to solve big problems, right? Like, there's tons of people who want to live in New York and can't afford it. And I feel fortunate to be able to work with local partners in different neighborhoods, different nonprofits, service providers that aren't just service providers for us, but also our partners in deals that work with us to best design a building, whether it's the security of the building, the social service spaces, the amenities, to make sure that we can meet communities and neighborhoods where they're at, but the kind of retail that they want in. And that local influence and local partnership is what allows us to be successful in different neighborhoods, right?
No, for sure. Well, let's talk about affordable housing a little bit, because I know that's a big part of the portfolio. I know you have market rate as well, like you said in your intro. But on the affordable housing front, like, what are you seeing maybe the city, or, you know, what are you guys kind of advocating for that might make it easier? You know, I know obviously 421A expired, but I think we've got the new bill is in place, right? So I think the affordable housing is starting up again.
So 420A and 45X are programs through which affordable housing is built as part of a market rate deal. So we do large scale market rate deals that have an affordable component through 421A. You know, 485X is a little more complicated, but we also build a number of 100% affordable developments. So those we build a few different ways. We partner with existing landowners. We partner with nonprofits who might own land. We win RFPs to the city, or we purchase sites. You know, land prices in New York are really high. So
yeah,
for the most part, we're either winning a city or state RFP or partnering with an existing landowner. But it's certainly a big part of our business and a really important part of what we see as our role as a development firm in New York. I think you were asking about how we think about affordable housing, or
you know, like what are you guys advocating for, and what can maybe me and the audience also be aware, like what's coming up and what should we be advocating for, right? That could kind of
help. I think it's really, we're really lucky that there's so many housing agencies in New York, city and state agencies that are focused on trying to increase production. I think there's both new affordable housing, ground up construction, but also preservation of existing units to increase the housing stock and make sure housing remains healthy. So that's another big component, particularly, you know, there's a limited amount of resources. There's only so many projects that the city can finance and participate in a year. So affordable housing gets built through tax abatements and city subsidies, right? So there's a finite amount of resources, a certain number of projects get built. So I think getting clear direction from the city on the kind of projects they want is really important. And certainly, you know, the city housing agencies put that information out. We know that housing for families and housing for seniors is extremely important, that housing for very low-income populations is very important. There's a big push now to include more supportive housing for formerly homeless New Yorkers. So that's something we're starting to incorporate more and more into our projects. And also, in addition to incorporating the units, there's funding for services for those residents to help with their transition to permanent housing, which is an important part of making sure that that transition is successful and that the projects ultimately serve and meet the need of New Yorkers who are in need.
This episode is brought to you by Infinite Consulting Corp, your go-to firm for MBE certified project and construction management consulting. Discover how Infinite can help you build a better future at infiniteconsultingcorp.com.
Very cool. And because the 421A is the state program, right? But what about, like, how's the city of Yes playing into all this? I know they're looking for more housing opportunities. The city's doing that on through their program as well, right?
Yeah. So city of Yes is a zone, is really like changes to the zoning program to allow for more flexibility so that people can build more in different areas. I think it's great. It took away a lot of red tape and it changed some of the restrictions and made it easier to try to figure out what the right kind of project is at a certain location and really build what's needed. Obviously, you know, 421A, as you know, expired. 485X replaced 421A. There's some challenges with the 485X program, in particular around wage requirements. Once you get build over 100 units, the average wage for construction workers goes up, which is for many reasons a good thing, but it makes the deals not pencil. So smaller deals are feasible, but really in a lot of neighborhoods where the average wage is high, you just can't build new market rate housing.
It's really interesting. I actually didn't know that nuance of the new, the 485X. I knew there were challenges, but I didn't know that that was one of them. So I'm going to ask you one of my favorite questions to ask. Actually, it's two questions, but I'm going to ask them both right now. One is, and I know it's really hard because you probably have so many wonderful projects, but is there one particular project in your mind that just like sticks out where you're like, I'm just like, that was just amazing that we got that built and done and the impact it had on its community and how great that was?
There's so many projects I feel that way about, but the first one that comes to my mind, and maybe it's because it was working on when I first met you, is our Crossroads Plaza project, which is in the Bronx. It was three phases with a 20,000 square foot public plaza in the middle. It's three different buildings with different 100% affordable, 425 units, different income mixes. So serving from very, very low income to moderate income residents. We house a universal pre-K, a health center, and an office for the Foundling, which is a foster care organization that helps support children who have been in foster care. So it's just a really wonderful building. It's really exciting. I feel like because it was three phases and we built it over, you know, the earlier part of my career, I was there very often for a long time. I have a favorite bakery across the street. I have restaurants I've been to nearby. So it's just a project I'm really proud of that I love to visit and think is a great addition to that community.
you know, the things you're talking about, like universal pre-K, is childcare is such a challenge for so many people, right? You know, I mean, it is not it's not inexpensive for sure.
And I think that's what I love about this project. It serves so many community needs. It's like part of, it's not just a building where people go in and sleep and come out. It's part of the fabric of those streets and what people see and interact with every day.
And then did you say there was like, you said something about foster children? Were you supporting foster children?
The Foundling is a nonprofit that provides services for children and in foster care and their families. So their offices are there.
That's amazing. What a great impactful project, right? That's, again, going back to like why we love what we do. It's because you really impact people's lives, you know? And so my second favorite question, right, that always couples with that one is, do you have like a personal story that you could share, like where maybe someone either spoke to you about how that project made a difference, not that particular project, but a project you worked on just made a difference in their life, or you heard, you know, through the grapevine of someone, you know, that was just like kind of more personal.
There's so many great stories about what we do. I think one project I've worked on more recently that is something I really enjoyed is the rehabilitation of Sackhorn Houses, which is 412 units, also in the Bronx. It's a NYCHA property where we worked really closely with the tenant association and the residents to finalize a plan for a comprehensive rehabilitation. We're in construction now. It's going really well. And on the site, actually, Kemba Walker, who used to be a Nick, grew up in living in Sackhorn Houses. And he had many years ago contributed a basketball court where they host a tournament called Top of the Hill. And when we converted Sackhorn Houses from being just a NYCHA property to being part of this public-private partnership with Douglaston, our partners, and NYCHA, we spoke a lot with the tournament to make sure that as we did construction, we wouldn't interrupt their operations. It was important as sort of a cornerstone of the community that this basketball tournament, where lots of local teams came to play every night of the summer, would remain. So visiting that each summer is really a highlight for me because it's an amazing tournament. The guys who run it are wonderful people, and it really brings together all different people in the community, people that live at Sackhorn and also people from other parts of New York. There's even people that come from New Jersey to compete and play and just sort of have these beautiful nights on this court. So it's something I really love.
Such a nice touch, and what a great personal story. I will mention, just because you brought up NYCHA, and you actually made me think of it when you initially brought it up, and I forgot to mention, but we had Vlada Kniff on the show. I don't know if you hear from the trust. She's wonderful. But I think what NYCHA is trying to do with their, you know, development partners and people like you and firms like yours is really wonderful. Giving the residents like a say in what's going to happen and then also getting them invested in it. Just wonderful. So I just wanted to bring to light that I think they're moving in a really great direction. It sounds like you guys are part of that solution, right? You know, sometimes people are part of the problem, but we want to be part of the solution. And I think you guys are probably accomplishing that.
Yeah, the PAC program has been a great addition to sort of the tools New York City has to preserve housing. And it's really great to go and see, you know, the before and afters of the changes we're able to make, not just in the units, but campuses as a whole, new playgrounds, new lighting, new walkways, new building systems, so that the quality of life for residents can improve. So it's something we're really excited to be a part of.
That's great. So we'll shift gears a bit. And this was something I told you, you know, before we jumped on here to prep in a way, was, you know, there are a lot of people listening to the show who are like, I want to be as accomplished as Jessica. Not all of them are going to go to three top level schools. So that part they've already missed the boat on from. What's some advice you have for people that are like pursuing a career in development or even just in this like industry, right? In the AEC space, what do you think sets people apart, right? How does someone get successful?
I think it goes back to what I said before. It's important always to be prepared, to be passionate, but also to just sort of be who you are, right? Like, be honest about your strengths and your weaknesses. Don't be afraid to ask people and to talk to you, to build relationships, to have coffee chats. I think at the end of the day, you have to put yourself out there a little bit, and it can be scary. But if you think you're interested in something, I wouldn't go in sort of cold. I would do your research and come prepared, but there's no harm in asking people to talk to you, asking someone for guidance. And some people will say no, but you only need one yes. So
you only need one yes. I love that. Just that like general idea, because it's true. And I've found that in this industry, most people are willing to say yes. Like, I was really hesitant about this early in my career, which is just picking up the phone and calling someone and asking them a question because they're going to think I'm stupid. They don't have time for me. They don't care, right? And, you know, the more my dad really was the one that encouraged me to do that because I would see him do it. He would pick up the phone and like important people. And I'd be like, and he'd ask them questions that like, even I was like, was that a good question to ask them that important? And like, but it was so genuine and like authentic. And the person on the other side just wanted to help. And they were like, oh yeah, Jim, like, yeah, no, we've dealt with that before. Here's how you do it. And
yeah, but it comes into character again, right? Like if people see you out there working hard and trying and doing your best, like my perspective is you can't expect people to be perfect. I don't expect myself to be perfect. I don't expect you to be perfect. Like, I don't expect anyone I work with to be perfect because there's no such thing, right? You have to be able to make mistakes and support one another through them, try to find a solution. You ask me my favorite quote. Unfortunately, it's another Jeffism, but it's that everyone can make mistakes. You just don't make the same one twice. So you have to be able to, you have to take the risks and feel comfortable doing that because if you don't, you'll never know if you could have.
I'm gonna reference three books right now because one is Ray Dalio wrote a book called Principles. Ray Dalio is the co-founder of Bridgewater.
I have the kids version for my daughter, actually, and we were cleaning out her bookshelf the other day and I tried to get rid of it. I'm like, yeah, my brother. She's like, I like that book. We must keep it. I'm like, that bodes well for your future.
It's definitely, I mean, I don't know about the kids version and it's my library is not here.
I have the adult one too.
But it's okay, like thick.
No, the kid one has a lot of pictures.
But one of the things he talks about in there, and I took this to heart, and I'm only mentioning it because you just mentioned something similar, was like, if someone made a mistake in the early days of Bridgewater, they were not going to be fired as long as they wrote it down in a book. They have like this big book in the middle of their office, bullpen, whatever. If you wrote your mistake down, it was shared at the end of the week. That way, no one else ever made that mistake again.
And yeah, it's that's helping people, right? You should learn from one another. And just so you know, since you made me sound so wonderful, I interviewed for a job at Bridgewater and I didn't get it. So I've had lots of no's.
Oh, hey, I'm sure Ray's made mistakes too. This was
exactly this big mistake, Ray.
The other book I want to just a quick thing because, and you touched on these concepts earlier, like Start With Why by Simon Sinek, like to have a purpose for what you're doing, you know, and you talked a lot about that, right? You saw your dad and he just lit up and he had a purpose, right, in doing this and helping the communities he could. And that was really great. And I think you said something along the lines of like, you know, like being about the bigger picture. And there's another book just called The Psychology of Money by Morgan Housel. And it talks a lot about like that idea, which is, if you're just chasing the money the whole time, you're eventually going to end up compromising your character. That's what you were talking about earlier. You said it was important to have good character. That's what it was. Sorry, I knew I was going to tie it back. And just don't let yourself get into that position.
I was going to say that when you asked about advice too, like it comes down to character. Maybe I said this a few minutes ago and forgot already. Yeah, but if at the end of the day, if you have good intentions and are, you know, not everyone's going to succeed at everything they do, but I think that you get a good shot at it by trying to do the right thing, and that's all we can do.
No, it's very true. Very nice. I love that. Appreciate you sharing that advice, and I hope the listeners will take it to heart. And the beauty of this is like, it honestly doesn't matter. Like, you know, we gear that towards early career professionals, but like, you could be, you know, in your 50s or 60s, and that's still good advice. Pick up the phone or it's a while and talk.
It also benefits you professionally because life is long, and people remember how you acted, if you stole a deal from them, if you misrepresented something. So all you have is your name, right? So you got to do right by people.
It's a small industry. And I will say this just happened to me like over the weekend. I had an early stage investment deal come across my desk. And I have a buddy who's like a specialist in this, right? And I sent him the deal saying like, hey, this looks pretty cool. And he's like, Eric, I agree with you. My only advice is I see one of the GPs on there and I had a deal go really bad with him. And personally, I blame him for that deal going bad. And I was just like, oh, wow. And I don't want to get involved because even if.
But I bet if that guy had picked up the phone and called your friend and said like, I'm sorry, I take responsibility for this.
Right. Yeah.
He would have called differently.
No, it was definitely.
Sometimes we don't do things because we're embarrassed to have to go out there and say like, I feel strongly about this actually. Like you can't. You have to be able to say, like, I was wrong or I didn't do this well. Otherwise, you'll never grow and you'll never give other people the opportunity to see that, you know, you were trying to do the right thing.
That there's, if you're introspective about it and honest, it changes everything. But I think that was the problem. He didn't feel, and I'm, you know, just similar to what you said, like, if I don't feel I can trust the people going into a deal, it's just not a deal I want to do. It could make the most money in the world. I just like, I don't want to be in that environment. It's just not good.
Life's too short. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Life is too short. All right, cool. Let's flip back to development because I want to ask you two more questions before we jump into our lightning round. My question was just the role of technology in development. Like, what are you guys seeing coming in?
That's a great question. And actually, I wasn't rushing to get here for lunch. I was at a Green Pearl developer roundtable. We talked a lot about AI there and the ways different people are using it. I think the consensus of the group a little bit was it has to come from the top, right? People in senior roles need to understand and invest themselves in how to use AI effectively to make sure that you're getting the most out of it within your organization. So it's not going to replace knowledge and reasoning, but it can help you be more efficient and figuring out the best ways to utilize it for efficiency instead of for replacing people or tasks, to me, is the right answer.
That's a great answer. And my chief of staff is kind of like heading this up for us, right? Like, how and where do we implement AI? That's kind of like she's been, you know, having some conversations with different folks, and that's been a lot of feedback that we're getting. Cool. Real quick, what's the next big project you're working on or excited about?
Oh, there's so many. We're doing a condo on 82nd Street that I'm really excited about. We haven't done a condo in quite some time, and it's a beautiful project. We have a great team running it, and I'm excited to see sort of the end product.
Very cool. And then I'm going to jump into the lightning round. What I always like to ask is, outside of New York City, do you have like a favorite city for architecture?
Architecture, how interesting. You know, my parents recently were spending a lot of time in Lisbon, and I loved Lisbon. It was really different. And I loved sort of the Moroccan influences in terms of the tiles and the colors. So that was a little bit inspiring to me.
Very cool. Another one, I know you're a New Yorker, your family's New Yorkers. What are your sports teams?
Knicks, Yankees, Jets, Islanders.
Me too. That is
rare.
A rare combination.
Rare combo.
I'm also an, you know, I'm from Long Island, so Islanders.
Yeah. Was it my mom drank from the Stanley Cup.
Really?
Yeah.
Very cool.
Very cool. I'm a very cool mom.
What's that story?
Yeah. She was there. I don't know. I guess like now it's impossible for anyone to drink from the Stanley Cup. And my mom is very young, but when she was younger, I guess it was easier. So they won and she was there. And
that's a great story. It's the piece. What is
yeah, exactly.
All right, last one. Do you have a favorite book, movie, TV show, musician?
I really don't know how to answer that. I don't really have a favorite of
that's
any
great.
Of those things.
These are lightning round questions. They're for you to think on your feet.
But I recently started the book, more than one book club, so I'm reading a lot again, which I'm really enjoying.
What are you reading? What's a book?
I just read Isola, which I really enjoyed. I thought it was great.
Awesome. Well, it is 2:30, so I want to say thank you for being on the show. This was such a fun conversation. I know we're a little rushed here. I hope you're not late to your next meeting. Do you have any closing or parting words you want to share?
I want to thank you. I really appreciate the time, and it's always fun to get to catch up with you.
And with that, I'll say that's all the time we have for today. We'll include links to any resources that we talked about during today's shows. And thanks for listening, everybody. Watch out for our next episode.
Thank you, Eric.
This episode is brought to you by Infinite Consulting Corp., your go-to firm for MBE certified project and construction management consulting. Discover how Infinite can help you build a better future at infiniteconsultingcorp.com.